The Story of Our Health Message, Chapter 21, Training of Physicians. As early as 1873, Mrs. White, speaking of the physicians at the Health Reform Institute, asserted that a larger work could be accomplished if there were more physicians who had the right stamp of mind, proper culture, and a thorough understanding of every part of the work devolving on a physician. At that early date, she saw that it would not be an easy matter to obtain the right class of men and women, physicians who were fitted for the place, and who would work harmoniously, zealously, and unselfishly for the benefit of suffering invalids. "Men are wanted at the Institute," she wrote, "who will have the fear of God before them, and who can minister to sick minds and keep prominent the health reform from a religious standpoint. Teachers needed. The difficulty of obtaining physicians with a thorough scientific training and at the same time possessing the spiritual qualifications needed became more apparent as time went on. Today, the Seventh-day Adventist denominational medical college may draw students from educational institutions where they have received a Christian training that tends to strengthen their desire to dedicate their lives to the work of the Lord. At that early time, however, the denominational system of Christian education was in its first stages of development. When, in 1876, Drs. J.H. Kellogg and Kate Lindsay, graduates from medical colleges where they had received the best training then available, joined the medical staff of the sanitarium, they brought to the institution not only an efficiency in therapeutic practice, but a zeal to make its work deeply spiritual. The same may be said of their associate, Dr. Phoebe Lamson, who had been there from the beginning. Steps were taken at once to give opportunity for other young men and women to obtain the necessary qualifications. As we have noted, the best they could do was to give them preliminary instruction in such subjects as anatomy, physiology, and chemistry, which were then accepted as a part of the medical course by well-recognized medical colleges. This instruction was frequently given by Dr. J.H. Kellogg, the energetic and tireless medical superintendent, at the close of a strenuous day of professional service, perhaps running into the late hours of the night. He unselfishly gave money and time in helping others to fit themselves for the medical profession. No less than 20 young men and young women were thus started during a decade after Dr. Kellogg's own graduation. Calls for medical students. Early in the 80s, published calls for prospective medical students began to appear. A course of lectures to a select class of students who wished to prepare themselves to enter some first-class medical college was offered in the winter of 1881 at the sanitarium, and it was stated for the benefit of such that the practical instructions and exceptional opportunities for medical observation make this an unusually favorable opportunity for a few well-prepared young ladies and gentlemen who will be allowed to pay their way in assisting in various practical branches, in which they will gain invaluable experience while helping themselves pecuniarily. For the summer of 1882, we find a notice that the medical students at the sanitarium were taking their annual departure, with a specific mention of three young ladies returning to the State University in Michigan, two to Philadelphia, and one to the Bellevue Hospital College. Ibid, October, 1882. The summer vacation spent at the sanitarium enabled the students to gain an experience in the principles of rational treatments before continuing their studies in the colleges, where the pharmacopoeia still formed the basis for general treatment of the sick. Before time for the schools to open in the following autumn, exceptionally excellent advantages were again offered for young men to begin the study of medicine. A year's work in the line of medical study and experience might be taken with opportunity to work for board and tuition. The qualifications required were a first-class moral character, a fair literary education, good health, good manners, a good disposition, with a willingness to work and study hard and a determination to excel. The response to these calls was, however, disappointing. Besides the Battle Creek Institution, there was but one sanitarium in operation in the denomination, at St. Helena, California, opened in 1878. And it is not strange that there was no general conception of the possibilities before Seventh-day Adventist physicians. Hence, only a few responded to the calls, and among those who did avail themselves of this opportunity, not all appreciated the responsibilities of the profession as a missionary agency, or had an adequate conception of the qualifications for a Christian physician. In 1884, a most opportune and enlightening message was sent to the medical superintendent of the sanitarium, and was made available for general circulation in the next number of Testimonies for the Church, published in 1885. Professional men, whatever their calling, need divine wisdom. But the physician is in special need of this wisdom in dealing with all classes of minds and diseases. He occupies a position even more responsible than that of the minister of the gospel. He is called to be a co-laborer with Christ, and he needs staunch religious principles and a firm connection with the God of wisdom. Essential qualifications. Essential qualifications of Christian physicians are listed in this important article. They are to be firm as a rock to principle, kind and courteous to all, strictly temperate, free from the use of tobacco, possessed with a natural energy, force, and perseverance that will enable them to reach a high standard of excellence. Men of prayer. Closely connected with the great physician of soul and body. Mrs. White deplored the fact that some who had entered upon the duties of the profession were altogether unprepared, having neither the requisite knowledge, nor the skill and tact, the carefulness and intelligence necessary to ensure success. She wrote, "Some have been singled out as men who might be useful as physicians, and they have been encouraged to take a medical course. But some who commenced their studies in the medical colleges as Christians did not keep the divine law prominent. They sacrificed principle and lost their hold on God. They felt that single-handed they could not keep the fourth commandment and meet the jeers and ridicule of the ambitious, the world-loving, the superficial, the skeptic, and the infidel. Temptations of every kind opened before them, and they had no strength to resist." In contrast to the student who had thus lost his way while pursuing his medical studies in a college where often his instructors were worldly wise men and his fellow students infidels, some had gone through the course and had remained true to principle. Of these, Mrs. White said, "They would not continue their studies on the Sabbath, and they have proved that men may become qualified for the duties of a physician and not disappoint the expectations of those who furnish them means to obtain an education. Like Daniel, they have honored God, and he has kept them. Doctors needed. It became obvious that something should be done, if possible, to make a more careful selection of the young men and women who should be encouraged to study medicine. And before entering upon the course, the candidates should understand the difficulties and trials, as well as the more pleasing features, of the physician's work." Graphically did Mrs. White picture the arduous duties of the physician, who is often deprived of needed rest and sleep, perhaps the victim of unmerited reproaches, and left to stand alone, the subject of Satan's fiercest temptations, feeling himself misunderstood, betrayed by friends. And, she continued, "Many, knowing how trying are the duties of the physician, and how few opportunities physicians have for release from care, even upon the Sabbath, will not choose this for their life work. But the great enemy is constantly seeking to destroy the workmanship of God's hands, and men of culture and intelligence are called upon to combat his cruel power. More of the right kind of men are needed to devote themselves to this profession. Painstaking efforts should be made to induce suitable men to qualify themselves for this work." Truly, by this time the need for more Christian physicians was imperative. The members of the sanitarium staff were greatly overworked. It was evident that it would be folly to permit such self-sacrificing and competent workers to go on, and on unassisted, until they utterly broke down health-wise. Broad plans must be laid for the training of several who might help to bear the burdens in the institution and to be prepared to man other institutions as Providence might open the way for similar medical work elsewhere. Counsel from Heaven. At this crisis in the medical missionary work among Seventh-day Adventists, Mrs. White passed from California through Michigan on her way to Europe. So concerned was she over the critical situation in the sanitarium at Battle Creek that before sailing she wrote out a document setting forth the urgent need for the training of consecrated youth as nurses and physicians. She insisted on the utmost care in choosing the youth for medical training and urged the importance of safeguarding the spiritual interests of those who should be encouraged to enter the medical colleges of the world. This document was printed in a 44-page pamphlet entitled "Counsels to Physicians and Medical Students." In outlining the perils connected with a sojourn in a medical college as usually conducted, she spoke of the great need for godly physicians, men who have high and pure and holy principles. She had been shown, she said, young men who had entered upon the medical course, intending to do right and to maintain their Christian principles, but who had, notwithstanding their good resolutions, come forth from their student life, less fitted in many respects for the kind of work necessary for them to do than before they entered college. Despite the great need for physicians, however, she was led to question the wisdom of the plan of sending young men to a medical college to learn to treat the sick, where they were brought in contact with every class of minds, and into companionship with skeptics, infidels, and the profligate. There were but few, she lamented, who came forth, like Joseph and Daniel, uncorrupted, firm as a rock to principle. She reminded the young graduates that they should consider their education only just begun. They were not to feel themselves on an equality with physicians of experience. On the contrary, they were, by thoughtfulness and caretaking, to earn a reputation and gain the hearts of those whom they serve. For years more passed, and despite the appeals made by the sanitarium staff and by Mrs. White, only a very few availed themselves of the opportunities and the inducements offered by those who realized the need for Christian physicians. A notice appearing in the Review and Herald stated, "The increasing demand for physicians of both sexes who have been thoroughly trained in all branches of medical science, and especially in the principles maintained and the methods employed at the sanitarium, has induced the stockholders and managers of the sanitarium to offer special inducements to young men and women of suitable age, ability, and acquirements to engage in this branch of the work. A hopeful outlook, such pecuniary assistance as they may require, was offered to persons of promise who would come to the sanitarium to receive a short course of preliminary instruction, and then go to some reputable medical college to complete their studies." Still, the response continued to be deplorable until the summer of 1891. Then very suddenly the discouraging prospect of securing an adequate number of prospective physicians of the right character was changed. Under the heading, "A Hopeful Outlook," Dr. Kellogg reported, "A few months ago we were almost in despair with reference to a supply of laborers for the great field of medical missionary work which seems to be opening up before us. In reply to the earnest appeals we had been making for several years, for young men and women to be educated for the medical missionary work, and notwithstanding the favorable terms held out as an inducement to well-qualified young men and women to engage in the work, only two or three had offered themselves as candidates for the preparatory course. A few weeks ago, however, when we were almost disheartened and had begun to think that it was impossible to arouse an interest in this line of work, one or two promising young men, and as many young women, offered themselves for the work, and within 3 or 4 weeks a number of others were added to the list. Until at the present time we have 13 young men and 7 young women, 20 in all, who have pledged themselves to medical missionary work and are pursuing studies preparatory to engaging in the work under the auspices of the sanitarium. Let us look in on a meeting held in the sanitarium parlor, in the evening of August 18, 1891, a few weeks after the foregoing announcement appeared. There we should find the members of the General Conference Committee, the Sanitarium Board of Directors, and most of the 20 members of the new medical class, with Elder Oye Olson, President of the General Conference, acting chairman. Dr. Kellogg rehearsed the efforts put forth during the preceding 15 years to encourage young men and women to obtain a medical education. He pictured the deep regret, distress, and discouragement brought to those who had devoted time and money to their education, because many who had been assisted had, after a short time, disconnected from the cause, to enter upon independent medical work. In some instances, not only had they manifested little or no regard for the reformatory principles represented by the institution, but had even used the influence and prestige gained by their connection with the sanitarium for the advancement of their personal interests. A pledge of loyalty. The General Conference Committee had now joined with the Sanitarium Board in taking the responsibility of selecting young men and women for this work and supervising their training for it. Dr. Kellogg feelingly expressed his great joy at the response to this plan. He set forth the brave responsibilities assumed by those who engage in the practice of medicine, and the large amount of painstaking effort and expense incurred by the institution and those connected with it in the education of physicians for this work, and stated furthermore that the following pledge had been signed by each of the prospective students then present at the meeting: "Believing that the principles of hygiene and temperance reform, which are taught in the sanitarium, are a part of the truth of God, and that the sanitarium has been established by the direction of the Lord for the development and promulgation of these principles, and that this work is a part of the work of God, I therefore pledge myself, 1. that I will uphold by precept and example the principles of hygienic and temperance reform presented in the testimonies of Sister White and promulgated by the sanitarium and its managers. 2. That I will engage in medical work in connection with the cause, under the direction of the managers of the sanitarium and the General Conference Committee, for a period of 5 years after graduation, providing I am not prevented from so doing by failure of health, or other reasons which shall be considered good and sufficient by the Sanitarium Board and the General Conference Committee. In explaining the principles of the sanitarium, Dr. Kellogg mentioned the non-use of flesh food as a prominent feature, also abstinence from tea and coffee, and rigid teetotalism from the use of alcoholic liquors. These and a strict adherence to the highest standard in dietetic reform advocated by the institution were presented among other things as duties obligatory upon those who enter upon this work and sign this pledge. The proceedings approved. Each member of the General Conference Committee expressed approval of the proceedings. Elder Olson spoke particularly of the need for well-trained Christian physicians, whose labors might give greater efficiency to the work of many evangelical laborers, and hoped that next year a larger class might be preparing for work. The cooperation of the General Conference Committee and the Sanitarium Board made it possible to characterize this as one of the most important meetings ever held in the interests of missionary work in the history of this denomination. It marked an advanced step in the history of health education among Seventh-day Adventists. The rapidly growing work of the denomination had created openings for its youth in many lines, and those leaders connected with the conference work, with their closer contact with the church membership, had naturally used their influence in behalf of such enterprises as those with which they were most intimately acquainted. This had been one of the reasons why the sanitarium management had found it difficult to obtain recruits for medical study. Now the united study of the leaders in the General Conference brought to the latter a fuller recognition of the value of medical missionary work in the advancement of the cause of truth. A new era in the training of Christian physicians was thus opened.